Okay, I want to call the meeting, board meeting of the Discovery Bay CSC order, and join Director Simon.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
President Pease.
Here.
Vice President Lee.
Here.
Director Graves.
Here.
Director Simon.
Here.
Director Steele.
Here.
Okay, at this point, the meeting is open to public comments. The public can speak on anything that's not on our agenda, and you have a 3-minute time limit. Is there any public comment? Looks like everyone's bashful, so we'll close public comments and go into presentations. Veolia, please.
Move me to the front of the class.
Yes, I think it's a good move, Paul.
Yes. So, in the month of February, we continue to our safe practices, over 107,000 hours of non-reportable incidents with plants, all safety training, and we did a special lockout tag out last month. All discharge and state monitor reports were submitted on time. All wells are running active. We produced a little over 39 million gallons last month of February. As you can see here, we continue our downward compare to 2013. We're still every year dropping a little lower, so we're doing really good on water conservation. And we have about a 34% reduction compared to 2013 in February. We used 2.2 million gallons at the wastewater plant of recycled water. We're well in within our NPDES permit, which plant running very, very well. No excursions, no permit violations. All samples were taken, all back tees. We flushed over a little over 21,000 feet of lines last month and TV'd almost a little over 34,000, inspected 77 manholes. We continue to work on the backlog of maintenance. You can see the numbers down. Staff doing a really good job of keeping up on our PM. Things are going very well. And as you know, there's a beautiful picture of our plant.
Fantastic.
Any questions?
Any questions from the board?
No, thanks.
No questions means you're doing an excellent job.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're going to move to the consent calendar. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Business and action items. Audited financial statements. Staff?
Thank you very much. Dina, who's our financial manager, is taking a very well-deserved vacation this week off with her husband and children. And we have Pauline, and I hope I pronounce this right, Sanguinetti and Mark Croce from our auditing firm to present their findings to you.
Thank you very much. I'm here tonight, I'm Mark Croce, to do the presentation for your annual audit for the fiscal year end June 30th, 2015. And I'm just going to look for some feedback from you guys on how much detail you'd like me to go into. The report should be in your board package and is quite thick. So my plan was to kind of go through the audit report, some of our letter to the board, as well as some of the summary information in the management's discussion and analysis, and highlight a few items. But please, I'm happy to go into more. I'm an accountant. I'd love to go into more detail, but I don't want to be here all night, so I'm sensitive to that also. In flipping into your report, on page one is the independent auditor's report. That report is a clean opinion, so it's the highest level of assurance that we can provide to the board of directors regarding the statements that are in front of you. They mean that they're free from material misstatement of any kind that we've been able to notice in our audit, and everything is operating effectively for your district. In moving forward, you can go on to the management's discussion and analysis, and there's a number of financial highlights for the year. Something important to note for this district, the net position increased by $631,988. So that's like a net income, if you would, including $58,000 that is related to governmental activities, and 573,000 that's related to business type activities. Your business type activities would be water and sewer. Governmental activities would be community center and other lighting and landscaping funds like that. The assets of the district were $59,171,229. Of course, as a community service district, the main portion of your assets are capital assets, $45,570,691. Non-current and current other district assets are $13,600,000. Liabilities for this district are very low. You are a younger district, not burdened with a lot of liabilities. Of course, you have to remember we're the Stockton, so we're used to lots of liabilities. Here it is only $15,231,628, which includes $13 million of long-term liabilities. Very low debt load for your district. Assets exceeded liabilities at the close of business. $43,939,000 is your net position. Again, very positive. If you look at the current financial resources basis, kind of the old governmental standards, governmental funds revenues exceeded expenditures by $81,738. And on your proprietary funds, you're collected $573,000 of revenue in excess of expenditures. Obviously, this district, as you're going through your agenda and other items, you have a lot of things going on. You're continuing to make improvements to your water and sewer system, so it doesn't mean that there's extra money in the pot. It just means that you are collecting at a rate consistent with what you need to provide future services to your residents. At your end, there was $1,190,000 in cash and investments to fund future governmental activities, lighting, landscaping, community center, et cetera, and $12 million in cash and investments to fund future business type activities. So you're keeping a nice cushion that's available to be able to continue to operate the district. As far as other things going forward here, we talked about the statements of position, governmental funds, business type activities. A lot of this is very consistent in the past. I'm not gonna go through it in detail. Page 5 does go through and provide you very specifically information about your governmental activities, business activities, and a total. Again, I'm kind of repeating some things, but from a governmental activity standpoint, your total assets, $3,760,000, $117,000 of liabilities, leaving net position of $3,643,000, of which $2,469,000 was invested in capital assets. Business type activities, sewer and water. $55,410,000 in assets, $15,114,000 in liabilities, leaving you net position of $40,296,000, of which $29 million is invested in capital assets. So you can kind of see how the district shakes out. Again, very positive. The district has met its bond covenants. Things are positive for the district in being able to move forward. Page 6 is your financial analysis of on the government-wide statements relative to revenues and expenses. You can see your total revenues in the governmental activities, $1,438,000, expenses, $1,401,000. Business-type activities, $7,763,000, expenses, $7,168,000. So this just gives you a nice summary of the district on an overall basis. Moving forward on page 7, we have some charts that just kind of take a look at expenses versus revenues, looking at revenues by source. Going forward, we have business type activities, looking at, again, expenses, revenues, general revenues, how things kind of shake out for the district for the year. A lot of information, but this first section is really trying to provide to members of the public or others that would want to access the statement some good summary information. Of course, we're accountants. We like to think it's in English and makes sense to everybody. And this is a good place for people to take a look at what's going on an overall basis of the district. If you flip into the statements quite a bit more, I'm going to go right on across to page number 12. You have the same information. This is your statement of net position. This is a full accrual balance sheet for the district. It gives you very detailed information about assets, liabilities, net position. You may be asking, why do we have these crazy lines called deferred outflows and deferred inflows when there's nothing on them? Governmental accounting standards require that we have them. Your district just doesn't happen to have any of those types of transactions. You would see items in there if this district provided pensions for their employees. This district is a younger district, does not have a pension plan for employees. So that's one of the items that typically in other governments would give rise to those word inflows and outflows. But aside from that, you can see it on your governmental activities and business type activities, same information I just told you, but in greater detail. Statement of activities is the same. Moving on to pages 13 and 14 goes into a governmental funds balance sheet, which is on the old modified accrual basis of accounting. And then on page number 17 is an income statement on the old modified accrual. We are, again, you're probably tired of me telling you this every year, we have to prepare statements on both the new full accrual method as well as the old modified accrual method, and then there's reconciliations between the two in order for everyone to say, how do I get from one statement to the other? So the old modified accrual was more of just the current resources basis of accounting. It was a very short-sighted one-year look out. A lot of your long-term liabilities don't appear on those statements, because if you didn't have to pay it next year, it kind of got pushed off to the side. On the full accrual, which is the statements that as accountants we prefer, this would be much more like what you would see in a regular business, for-profit business in the public sector, where you see all liabilities recorded for the district. Again, I will bring up one of the things that we've dealt with quite a bit this year is pension liabilities. This district is very fortunate in the sense that as a younger district, you have not entered into long-term pension arrangements with your employees that has for many, many agencies created some very large outstanding liabilities. In fact, many of our districts are, you know, showing their liabilities are exceeding assets once that pension information and full accrual of the pension liability has been recorded this past year. Something to be thankful for here that doesn't exist. I'm not going to go through things in great detail. If you guys want more, let me know. There's the cash flow statement. It's going to have all the information detailed by fund for the cash flows. And then the notes to the statements are very consistent with prior years. I, again, don't want to go through things in too much detail, but I mean, one of the bigger items that you may want to take a look at is if we get over to the outstanding debts. Let me get over to that page. That would be note F on the long-term debt, and that's on page 36. That's going to give you information about the outstanding bonds, what's payable, when they're payable. I know that's something very interesting usually to the board, making sure that our bond payments and liabilities are being met on time. Again, you have $14,512 is your original amount. You've made reductions. We're now down to $13,877,379 due on the bonds, with a payment in this current year, the 15-16 year, of $305,000 of principal. Very, very light debt load for a district of your size. Aside from that, I was gonna kind of open it up to questions. I'm happy, like I said, if someone would like me to go through all the pages in more detail, I'd love to do it, but I am sensitive to time tonight and wanting to be sure you can ask any questions that anyone may have.
Board have any questions?
I have one.
Perfect.
And this is looking out into the future. We're mandated by the state to put in some more infrastructure, a filtration system at about $7 million of denitrification a few years later, which is in essence going to double our current debt based on the fact that we're doing rate studies to accommodate those kind of things. Where we are now, from your vantage point, does that debt load have any concern?
No, you would still be well within what would be considered reasonable debt loads for a district your size. You would still not be exceeding 50% of your total asset value in debt. And you have to remember, your asset value is on a historical cost basis. So much of the equipment and improvements that were made for the sewer system and water system that were deeded over to the town came over and have been depreciating on top of that. So no, your debt load would be very moderate. And you do have cash resources. The district obviously needs to balance its borrowing needs with the cash resources that are available in its funds. so you may be able to pay for some improvements or a portion of those improvements with the current cash that's available and only finance what's needed. But I will tell you that concerns that we've heard from other agencies such as yours are interest rates are at historic lows and borrowing rates even for municipalities are at lows. So, I mean, you have to balance, you know, the thought would be if you would generally most municipalities that have the ability to borrow are at a point where they would be looking to hedge on the side of borrowing more maybe than they needed to because the rates are very good right now. So I, you know, it's interesting to hear that. You know, I'm always like, that makes as an accountant, yeah, it makes no sense. Why would you borrow more than you need? But the concept is if I can borrow today at a rate that's very low, lock that in, hedge my bets for the future, we have seen that happening. But no, you're in a good position. This district is very fortunate. Again, a young district with, you have zero to no legacy costs coming forward from prior commitments that were made to residents or employees or others.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, there is a letter, and I'll just go ahead and go right through that one just in the effort of time. There's a letter to the Board of Directors. This is our required communication from your auditors to the Board of Directors that indicates at one point this was supposed to be like a letter grade, where we'd come in here and say, gee, you got an A, a B, or you know, something like that. Good, thank goodness somebody said, no, you don't need to do that. It's just a letter. But we need to let you know about audit findings, significant findings, qualitative aspects of accounting principles. If we came into the town and felt like every time we looked at something, there was an effort to pound something into a budget category just to meet budget, or to, you know, not to properly reflect accounting, but to just meet budgetary goals or to meet certain internal metrics, we'd have to let you know, hey, you know, it looked like things were getting moved in certain directions that were not really accurate. And we're pleased to let you know we didn't find that. Everything was being put where it needed to go. We didn't feel like anything was being manipulated in a purposeful manner. Everything was clear and open. We do let you know that there is a sensitive estimate. We do make an estimate in your financial statements relative to allowance for doubtful accounts. You do have, you know, accounts receivable for activities that the town performs. Luckily, you know, everybody needs sewer and water, so it's generally not something that people don't pay. But we do have some people that may or may not get things paid on time, and there's an allowance for doubtful accounts that is included. That has been evaluated, and something that we're very pleased to let you know is that the district has done a great job in this past year of getting all that up to date and really have been quite on top of the accounts receivable as far as collections and even making sure nothing is getting old. Going on from there, difficulties encountered, if we were coming out having problems with the audit, we'd have to let you know. We're pleased to let you know we didn't. There's a listing of corrected and uncorrected misstatements. Most of these are just listings of entries that we made as a part of our audit. You'll see a lot of the entries say depreciation expense. We have recorded the depreciation on behalf of the district. That's something we do for many districts, but we are required to let you know that we calculated that and recorded it. So as auditors, it's, you know, technically we should be auditing something, not booking it. Depreciation, by our standards, we are allowed to do that, and we have done it. So it's not something outside the box, but it's listed here. There are also entries regarding some small adjustments that were made as part of the audit. A lot of times we'd come to the end. Many of them we could have just waved on and said, hey, it's, you know, materially accurate, but your staff wanted it to be as accurate as possible. And the final items regarding disagreements with management or consultations with other independent auditors. If we felt that you were, there were a lot of disagreements with us, staff was saying, hey, we're going to go to brand X over here because we don't like what you're telling us. Not that that's bad, but we would have to let the board know. So these are all required things. Short story, this is a very positive letter. Everything is as positive as it can be. From our standpoint, I know sometimes as accountants it doesn't sound that way, but our language is very boilerplate, so this is a very positive report. So that's where we're at. And I know Pauline had a couple things you wanted to just mention.
No, I just wanted to let the board know that, you know, we do appreciate management lets us come out and park ourselves in your office for at least a couple weeks. So, and they're always very helpful, and they, you know, we disrupt their daily activity, and a lot of times they're not getting them what they need to in order to accommodate us. So we do appreciate, you know, all of the staff and what they do during the time that we're out there. So, and they're all doing a great job. So you guys are really good staff at the current time.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, is there any public comment? I'll close public comment. Any discussion on the board? Do I hear a motion?
You need a motion to accept the report? I'll make a motion to accept the report.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
And thank you. If I can just comment, Dina, our finance manager, and Leslie Marable, the accountant, they really have been doing just yeoman's work on this. And you were absolutely correct, stopping their day-to-day work and providing information to you. They really deserve a lot of credit. You did a great job.
Please pass that on to staff.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll go to item E2. General Manager Recruitment Staff.
Thank you very much. At your last meeting, the board approved a contract with Bob Murray and Associates for the recruitment for the general manager position. And Mr. Bob Murray is here along with Gary Phillips, the vice president. Thank you very much. To talk to you about issues and challenges that you believe will be facing the district over the next 5 or 10 years, the type of characteristics that you're looking for in the recruitment. And I've attached to your staff report a couple of documents. One is a March 9th letter from Bob Murray. The second document is a survey that Rick Howard submitted to Bob Murray before he left, I think on probably one of his last days. And finally, I think Director Simon asked us to provide for you the recruitment that was used last time. And so that's provided in your packet as well. And so, Mr. Murray?
Thank you. Good evening, President Peace, members of the board. I'm Bob Murray with Bob Murray Associates. We're delighted to have been selected to help you with the search for a new general manager, and we look forward to that opportunity. This evening, Gary and I are looking to get a real feel for the district and what you're looking at in the future and how that impacts a search for general manager. So in the letter I provided, we're interested, as Kathleen said, in kind of three subject areas. The issues, challenges, and opportunities that you see facing the district, not only today, but as you look to the future, and certainly 5 or 6 months out until such time as a new general manager is on board. Second, the personal characteristics you'd like to see in the next general manager. You know, the kind of leadership style they bring to the position, the management approach, how they work with members of the board, the staff, the community, those kinds of things. And then finally, a bit about background and experience. Is this someone that you want from the industry, or like Mr. Howard is the board of generalists? Just a sense from the board of where we ought to be looking, quite frankly. So if it makes sense to you, maybe we can take those items one at a time. And go through those, and I'd certainly be happy to also answer any questions you might have.
Okay. Probably the easiest way, we'll just go down the row and jump in. Chris, you got Kevin?
Okay, so what are we starting with?
Issues, challenges, opportunities.
I think that I would like to see us focus on somebody that has water experience, water and wastewater experience, somebody that's been in that, not just public office, or not just a general manager of a public agency, but one that has water, wastewater experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the focus of what we do. Some of the other things probably can adjust better, but hit the ground running without that background is going to be pretty tough, especially with the projects that we have coming up pretty quickly in the next 12 to 18 months or so. I also want to I think it's important to have somebody who is a team builder, somebody that takes all the employees into consideration and tends to build a team to work with where everybody's on board with the program. I think that's extremely important. And so that we have the ability to retain employees because it's a good environment to work in, even though it may not be the highest paid agency because we're small in the area. There's other benefits that would go along with it, and that would be that it's a great place to work. So I think that's extremely important also. And I'll let the rest of the folks chime in to differ.
I think for me, a seasoned gentleman, more so than anything else, coming from a similar district. And our last general manager, when he came in, we had basically a startup general manager before that, and he was asked to do a lot of things that really wasn't in his skill set. When Rick came in, Rick was able to put processes in place. He was able to hire the right staff. He was able to make the staff. He was able to bring on to his way of thinking. To me, it's the same as in any business. You bring a general manager in who can run every department in your business, and who can delegate, and who can bring people together. So I would want to, more than anything in the world, I would want to see if you're a seasoned general manager that comes in. Because I think as a seasoned manager, he'll have more of wastewater experience. He'll have team building experience. He'll have processes experience. And that's what we need. Chris?
Yeah, I think that the experienced general manager, at least eight years plus of management, and definitely heavy on the water and the wastewater side. And I think the priorities are being able to interface at the state level.
I want to echo what's been said here, and also the comments Rick out in his list of projects. We've got some significant capital projects facing this district, significant in the sense of many other organizations, but financially quite an impact on this organization and how we can move forward financing the water and sewer infrastructure, how we're going to deal with this community center and keep it viable. And we've got some agreements with other people in the community that we need to resolve in terms of the kind of the last steps of development in this area. So I'm looking for somebody that can really that has a pretty broad spectrum of experience and that can deal with those infrastructure issues, the financing issues, and working with other parties that relate to
that. Yeah, I would agree pretty much. I'm not so sure why we need to have a specific time though. 5 years, 8 years, whatever, if the right candidate at some point is going to come. But the background, we have a moving professional organization now versus what we had 5 years ago, and Rick Howard did an excellent job. Whether they have strict wet water and wastewater background experience, for me, yes, that's a plus, but I wouldn't discount somebody else that has something comparable, size, and I think that the ability from a financial background size, because of the financing that we're going to be going through, and also the team building, the street core, if you will. The other issue that I have, we're going to talk about personal things, but I think we're going where you want to go, but yeah. We're not doing it your way.
That's fine. That's typical.
We don't listen to
that. I want to have full disclosure. Bob and I worked together when I was on the city council in Fremont, and we hired a new city manager. That city manager is still there, and it's been, 15 years? Yeah, 15 years ago. So he can find the right guy. So if we go find a friend, DS or Rich Howard, bring him in here. Great.
Well, we'll get Fred to retire.
Oh.
Move out of here and double dip, right?
I'm afraid he's too expensive. Not if he's retired.
Yeah, he's retired. Quite frankly, I think that's one of the sources of candidates you're going to have to look at, because a challenge you face, I was very curious, pleased to hear the report from your auditors. It's nice to go to an organization that's healthy, fiscal health, right? Versus most of the ones we deal with. The challenge, good news you have, and the bad news is a lack of a return. And so that's going to add a dynamic to the search in terms of where we can look for candidates, because if someone's in a retirement system like PERS or the 1937 County Retirement Act, it's challenging for them to move. It doesn't mean there aren't people in special districts who will be interested. It may be people from the private sector who are accustomed, people that contract with the public sector who are more accustomed to the kind of the retirement situation you're in, where a lot of companies don't offer defined benefit and things like that.
So, let me understand, if someone pays at PERS now,
right,
and they retire, and they're getting their PERS retirement, would they be able to work for us full time because we're not in that system?
Exactly. Yes, oh, they would.
Rick, that was Rick. Rick was in PERS and he was working here.
He dropped out, yeah.
Well, he wasn't hired. He
wasn't receiving any.
We were not paying that retirement anymore.
Right. Okay. The other thing that I think would be very beneficial from my standpoint is that they would be willing to move here into the community and not commute.
You know, I drove around the first time I was down here, and why wouldn't somebody want to live in a beautiful community like this and have a house in the water? What's up with that?
Well,
you'll find out that I have this special sense of humor that's somewhat warped.
I don't know if you saw the golf course we have around here.
I did, but it was gated and I was very disappointed.
We can get you in there. Bob and I are over there quite a bit. So that would be something that we'd be willing to relocate into the community. I think because we're so small in relative size, that the general manager is involved in the community, not only in what we're doing day to day, but also the Kiwanis and the Lions and the Chamber and all those kinds of things, and meeting his neighbors. So that would be important.
We had an LS Chamber because it was very active in the community.
Right.
And he would be whoever comes in. This is a small community. And in the 5 years he was here, everybody knew who he was because he showed up at everything. He went to Chamber of Commerce meetings, he went to Lions Club, he went to everything, and he got involved in it.
So somebody retired, living in a retirement community, getting an extra paycheck.
Yes, that works pretty good.
All right.
I just had one. I mean, we are a small organization. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be some pros and cons for different candidates. But in terms of a general manager here, it is a small group. 15 employees or whatever, and while they need to step back and take that big picture and not be a micromanager, they need to be able to also roll up their sleeves and are going to have to do some work. Sure, because there isn't a vast staff supporting it. It's a very talented but small staff, so I think the general manager is going to have to roll up their sleeves on frequent occasions and have to really do some staff work that maybe other organizations they would not be faced with.
And that brought to my mind, you probably thought about already, to be able to write staff reports and agenda and all that. So not having, as Bob mentioned there, suddenly if you've got three staff below you doing all that work and you're just managing them, you don't have that. So you're going to have to do those. Any other comments? What else do you need from?
Well, we've talked a lot about the kind of person you're looking for, alluded to some of the issues, particularly capital needs that you have in the future and the financing. And you've addressed kind of the background and experience, talking about maybe someone from another special district with water and wastewater, or a generalist if they have enough, savvy to help lead them. I mean, Rick came out of a special district, but it was transit. So your transportation trend's a little different. So that's what I've heard. I mean, I think it's fairly straightforward. In terms of process or anything else, we'd certainly be happy to answer any questions. But once we leave here, we'll put together a brochure. We'll work with Catherine on photos and things like that. And then we'll begin actively recruiting people. And Gary and I like to say that our best candidate may not be looking for a job. It's going to be the person that doesn't respond to every ad you run, but rather maybe somebody that's doing a good job where they are, and I can start a rumor that they're about ready to be fired, and they'll fly. We'll invite those people to become candidates and try and reach out to the best folks we can.
Yeah. Another item may not be said, but I want to say it publicly. need to be pretty computer savvy. I don't need to be a techie per se, but you know, we're small. We're a small organization. They're going to have to be able to solve a lot of this, but we don't have the staff. And also because this Rick introduced us, so we're trying to be paperless. Well, I'm an old guy with gray hair. Sometimes I can't do this that well, so I go to him and tweak it up for me, do whatever. So these other guys do a little better than I do. Yeah, Mark's got his on paper. So anyway, that would be another item, a big plus, mm-hmm. that they've got all that computer back. Okay, well, is there any public comment? We'll close public comment. Do I have a motion? Do we need
to? You do need a motion for this. There's no action item.
Okay. All right. Well, Bob, I see you again. Thank you. And bring us a couple of good candidates.
We'll bring forward a couple.
Yeah.
I look forward to working with each of you. Great community. Great community to do a search for, particularly when you get the audit that you did. You know, I've started a search in Pasadena right now, and they have a $6.3 million embezzlement 3-4 years ago. They actually just collected from their insurance, but they're not out of the woods from the Great Recession. I mean, they've got a balanced budget, but as they look forward, totally different circumstances. So it's good. I mean, the nice thing, because candidates, the first thing they ask you in today's environment, are they financially secure? So good job. Thank you.
About how long is an average?
Typically, it's about 75 to 90 days from the time we appear here to we're in a position to recommend finalists. And we'll work with Catherine on a schedule when we get that to you.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay, we're going to go to E3 contract with Veolia.
Thank you very much. And Craig Reed, I left a spot up here for you. I'm asking Gregory Harris, your district engineer, to join me. Negotiations with Veolia began with the January 27th letter, a copy of which is attached to your packet. As you know, the town has had a contract with Veolia that was effective May 1st, 2011, for the operation of wastewater and water facilities. Gregory, there's a spot here if you like, or there, wherever you are most comfortable, whichever one works for you. The district staff, predominantly Gregory and I, have been negotiating with Veolia fairly intensely over the past couple of weeks, and we bring to you a staff report with a number of recommendations, and what we're going to ask to you is authorize the board president and myself to sign on behalf of the district a First Amendment and renewal to the contract for the operation and maintenance of the water and wastewater facilities. And there are 10 items in the staff report, so I will briefly go through those, and Jeff, would just raise your hand whenever you want to chime in. The first item is the term of the contract would not change. The existing contract was for 5 years, and it allowed 1 or 2 60-month extensions. So this is being written as in the first extension to that. So after this period, there will be 5 more years that one more time that it could be extended. In terms of compensation, the proposal is to increase by $298,962 to an annual fee of $1,553,034. I should note that the existing contract has an inflationary adjustment. It's actually a calculation that you go through. There's a 3% maximum cap. It was calculated for the 16-17 year at 2.5%, and that amount is already in this $1.553 million. That increase equates to about, I think it's 22.8%, something like that, increase over this year. And as you go through the items, you'll see what do we get for that 22.3% increase. So and the main thing that we get is a 20% increase in staffing and 2 important new positions to be added. First item that we have here is the recruitment, what I call the recruitment period coverage. The existing contract includes a provision that Veolia must pay back the district if there is a vacancy in one of the staff members and that vacancy is not filled for 90 days. So on the 91st day, they start repaying our district. But the assets that they're working with are district assets. And if someone is gone for, it takes 90 days to fill a vacancy, that is a quarter of a year, and that's a measurable amount of time, and so you can get a backlog of repairs. So we wanted to make sure that time period was covered, and we proposed and Veolia agreed that they will bring in temporary staff whenever there is a vacancy, and we think that that is a very good a good change.
Let me ask.
Yes.
Temporary staff from where?
Temporary staff would either be from Veolia Resources or they would bring somebody in on contract.
With background experience.
Right.
Yes. And the positions that they have to meet certain certifications, so they would have to meet those. And I should have gone back, I'm sorry, let me go back on the compensation one on number two to first and ask Gregory to talk about the two new positions and the importance from the maintenance, engineering, repair, maintaining these important assets, why we need these, particularly the instrumentation and control technician.
So the majority of the cost is we're adding two more people to the project. And that's a significant bump, 20% more people, we're going from 8 to 10. But the district has added a lot of facilities since the 5 years ago. We've completed quite a few upgrades. We've added additional biosolids facilities. We've added another oxidation dish and a clarifier. In addition, we're looking down the road to add more facilities. We're going to add Title 22 facility. We're going to improve the UV facility. We're adding additional subdivisions have already come online. We've already added additional sewer and water facilities on the collection and distribution side as well. We've added additional well number 7 and our planning well number 8. We have unification coming. So what was clear to us is they have to have the manpower to staff not only maintenance of the facilities, which is the utility worker portion. We have a large maintenance demand now and growing. In the short term, going to be growing over the next 5 years of this contract. And then we constantly lacked this quality INC person that was envisioned in the original contract. The person hired at that time didn't work out, but the need still was there. And there's really quite a backlog of INC management functions, INC repairs, and INC planning that needs to take place. With somebody that's invested in the district, working here daily to put documents together, to run down existing facilities. We have a lot of INC equipment where we do not know how it was built or how it was wired or how it functions. And so when we need a repair, we constantly keep paying people to learn our system so that they can work on it. And it's like repairing a car without a manual. You just kind of have to look at it and work your way through it. Well, we have many, many INC facilities inside the district. I think we have over 50 PLCs district-wide. All of them programmed differently, all of them wired differently, all of them control things differently, and all of them varying in age from 30 years ago, you know, to as little 2 years ago. So it's a complex situation for someone to come in cold to all the time. The district's facing that cost now. Veolia has been providing one person one day a week out of the Richmond project to support this effort. And, you know, frankly, he gets here and all he does is fight fires. You know, he gets here for his one day. So we're unable to make progress on significantly upgrading and improving our INC systems, as well as just documenting what we have and organizing ourselves in a quality manner so that when we do new repairs, they're done in an efficient manner. In addition, we have a capital program where we regularly upgrade and improve the INC systems. At the moment, we're bidding every single thing out to contractors to have them come install it, and it's an expensive option. This person would be able to assist in actually reducing the cost of our capital items by taking some of the work on ourselves. You know, we don't have to go out to bid for every single thing. And then especially someone that's maybe not familiar with our systems, it's very costly for a cold bid to go out on the street when someone's completely unaware of exactly how the district works and get, you know, a good price out of it, because they're going to have to be based upon what they have to do. So those two people are I think key to the expansion of this contract and key to us making sure we are ready to take on the, but not only the facility we've already added, but the facility we're going to be adding very shortly.
Jeffrey, let's go right into item number four, and I know you touched on it, but I think that this is an important item. The instrumentation and control is the more expensive new employee that that we believe is critical for the district. And one of the items that we requested and Beulie agreed is that this person may be assigned to other relevant district work. And we believe that that's going to save the district money in the long run. So although we can't put a dollar figure on what we think the savings is, I think Jeffrey can give a good example of a case that we had and how much money we might have saved in that instance. Yeah.
So, you know, for instance, we're on a program where we're going to replace all the PLCs, you know, or the controls in the lift stations. We have 15 original lift stations the town's covered today. We completed pump station F just recently. You recall that was a $700,000 upgrade at doing the whole pump station. Pump station G is currently under construction. We bid a control panel for pump station G. We got a nice common control panel that was common in the industry for about $33,000. But then we bid the install of that panel. It came in low bid with $66,000 to essentially install a control panel. It's a very large cost, and it has to deal with the fact that outside people are coming in, they're traveling over here to install it. You know, there's risk in their approach to the project versus if the town did themselves. And I think there's going to be substantial opportunities hiring the right person to be upgrading the time ourselves, you know, and not having to go out to bid every single time we need to install something. And that will save, I think, a lot of money, because it turns out the two together, it's $100,000. $100,000 just to change a very simple control panel, you know, between the purchase and the install. And we're looking at that install cost and it's going to be a better way to do this. And so our hope and our desire is this person will have qualifications to assist much of that effort, and you know, then simply get an electrician to power the wire up and even up the rest of themselves. That kind of stuff is what we need to be heading towards, rather than our current process of public bid everything and let everything come in, and the dollar's the dollar, and that's what we're seeing with the president. You know, Frank could be paying a lot for a control panel. That conversation.
Brings me to a question. Maybe answered in here, but just for the public's knowledge, is our staff, will they be able to sit in on the interviews and things like that for this particular person?
And so that's what we have under item number six. Okay. That we actually requested that of Yoli, and they agreed that they are the employer, we are not the employer. But they did agree that the district will be consulted on the hiring to be able to provide feedback on the competency, and the expectation is that we will have one or more staff members that will attend an interview and be able to provide some feedback to them before the hiring occurs, and they have agreed. Keep going on further if there's no questions. We have an item number, I'll skip item number five and come back to that at the end. Item number seven, we've increased the certifications and experience for the plant manager. The existing contract required a grade 3 level for the plant manager, and once the filtration project comes online, we will be a grade 4 facility. And so we have, we will be including that within the contract, and also increasing the experience from 3 years to 5 years. Item number 8 also includes the certifications and experience for a chief plant operator, which is the individual that is charged with actually signing and certifying the accuracy of the data that goes to our regulatory agencies in terms of discharges. And that's the chief plant operator. It needs to have a grade 4 and a minimum of 5 years experience. Veolia currently provides this individual at the plant, actually someone at or higher than that level, but that was not included within the contract. And so that may be the plant manager, or it is currently a different person, and so we'd ask that that be included within the contract. When we get down to, you know, the details that you see on Appendix B amendments for item number 9, the key thing here is These are updating the appendices to identify every item that is currently part of our assets and to make it clear what the responsibility of Veolia is. And of note that Veolia has agreed it's not only these projects, but it is projects that are coming online. And that's a real critical part of what the district got as part of this, is that the items that will be coming online for the foreseeable future are already included within this price amount. And then item number 10, the key to that item, the Appendix C, is that's a section of the contract where Veolia is responsible if we receive a fine for a permit violation. And so if we are operating within the capacities and of our system, they are responsible for the violation while our capacity is increased. So we need to update that information. Lastly, in item number 5, additional services. From time to time, the district has asked Veolia to perform out of scope items. Veolia asked for an 8% increase, which the district did not want to go that way. But Veolia is correct that there was no provision within the contract for them to do out-of-scope services. So we have agreed that the contract should be amended, that out-of-scope services may be requested and performed when the cost is negotiated at that time. And those would come to the board as either a one-time amendment or a one-time out-of-scope item. If it's something that's an ongoing issue, it would be an increase to the annual fee. But if we've done our job right, there should not be an increase to the annual fee. So we feel that for the 22.3 or 23.3% increase that I think we calculated, we have 20% increase in staff, but we have also been able to add all of the foreseeable future projects within here, so we will not be going back and renegotiating price for the foreseeable future. And we believe that the staffing requests of Veolia are appropriate and I think will serve the district in the long run. So we believe that this would be fair for Veolia, but also really in the best interest of the district. And I don't know, Gregory, if you have anything else to add.
I think as from the staff's perspective, we feel comfortable that we haven't only taken care of just renewing the contract, we take care of the district for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
We've taken care of what you need for the next 5 years. So that's where our position is on the contract.
And then we also have representatives from Veolia. I think the vice president is here, as well as Daniel Stevens. And I don't know if they wish to say anything.
Questions of staff before we open up the public comment?
Yeah, I just want to clarify, Captain, if I could, on item 5. So what all we're saying there is that we're not going to, ahead of time, decide on an 8% fee. We're going to handle that as a contract basis, because it's been to our advantage in the past to use Veolia on many of our contracted projects. But we're just not agreeing to that fee in advance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Catherine, are the financial impacts of this agreement built into the rate study?
Yes, they will be.
Thank you. Any public comment? Seeing no public comment, I'll close the public comment. Bring it back to the board for discussion.
Does the only one want to say anything?
Yeah, I
have.
Yep. The only one.
But I just wanted to thank the town staff and the members of the board. You know, Veolia has had a very good relationship with the town over the last 7 years. You know, when we started under the emergency contract and then the 5-year contract, I know we have had some hiccups in terms of retention of staff, but we fixed that. You know, we went ahead and did a survey. We actually raised quite a bit of the hourly rate for some of the employees who are leaving to go and work in the Bay Area. So we've tried to come up with a wage rate so that these guys stay for a long term. And we look forward to another 5-year, working and serving the city over time.
Thank you. Move to approve.
A second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. I would like to say on behalf of myself and the board, Veolia has done an excellent job. Yes. Bernie is doing superhuman work over there. We don't get phone calls. And when the board's not getting phone calls either about waste not going out or water pressure being low, our life is better. So we look forward to another 5 years, and I think the contract, as I've read it, We've prepared for the future. You guys are doing a great job, and I look forward to two new people helping us get what we need accomplished during the next 5 years. So thank you.
Agreed. President, I want to just confirm that the recommended action from staff was to authorize President as well as Catherine, the general manager, to execute a contract once it's been reviewed by Veolia, and that's still happening. So she's laid out the
amend
terms. The amendment and renewal. So she has laid out those terms, and so long as there isn't a material change from that, that action will suffice to have that authority. If there is a material change, obviously we brought back. So just want to clarify that that is the action.
Thanks, Bruce.
Yes, thank you.
You're right.
Okay. We're going to move on to E4, contract for Reagan Sewer Manhole staff.
Thank you very much. As part of our ongoing infrastructure maintenance, the district runs into the issue where manhole covers are lower than the roadway, possibly. Virgil, if you want to come and add this, if I'm not saying this completely, about an inch, I think, is what he's explained to me, which then as cars will go over, they drop down on it and ultimately wear those lids. So Virgil is the one that handles these types of projects, and he evaluates the areas of the town and identifies the ones that are in the highest traffic area. And so we have a proposal from you in front from JW Backhoe, and the request is to authorize us to enter into a contract for $11,350 for the completion of this work. I should note that in our CIP, we had a budget allocation of $10,000 for this, not the $11,300, but we also had $18,000 for the rehabilitation of manholes. So you'll see in the summary here, with the total cost of the project, including that we're going to need to get encroachment permits, we expect the total cost is $12,000, and we will make sure that the overage is handled by comparatively reducing the amount of expenditures on the manhole rehabilitation. So we will not exceed the allocation for both of those amounts.
Yeah. This is for paving, isn't it? For when they've done paving or when they've done road work?
Who's that, Matt?
The manholes.
Yeah, they definitely are over many years. Periods of them.
Didn't we do this a couple of years ago? I thought we spent quite a bit of money.
No, what we do is we do a few every year, as we allocate only $10,000 per year to do that work. So what we have done is in the paving, the last 5 years, Tammy has come in and done certain streets, and they probably won't be back here for another 5 to 10 years, depending on the height. I think they'll probably be back on BB Boulevard back sooner, only because of the wear and tear on that road. But we just try to do the high traffic ones, and then now I'm working towards medium to low traffic ones that are still down. People hate to hear them, but that's the other one.
About how many
other ones do I have left?
Yeah, after this, how many are left?
No, five questions all at once.
I probably think that we probably have another 50 to 70 roughly in that area. But they're really small, and when I say small, the water ones pretty much are close to the curb. So you really, unless something really happens, to me, I'd rather wait till we have an issue with that valve. I have to dig that up anyway, but when I do, I raise it up anyway to do that. I'm mainly trying to go after the sewer ones where we don't have the issues of potential of digging that up, unless there's some major collapse.
Well, I guess maybe that's a more accurate question. How many of the major ones in terms of the sewers do we have?
I'd probably say you probably have another 30 of those. You know, it depends on how high do you want to raise them. Like I said, I'm trying to take the deepest in the high traffic. And then I'd like to bring them up to at least a half inch to an inch above grade, slope the asphalt, so when you drive, you kind of just drive over it, hardly feel it at all, rather than you drop in and you come back out. You put extra weight on that rib, on that lid, like we had one in the intersection, you constantly hit it with heavy trucks, that weight drops onto it and it starts to crack it.
Isn't there another way to do this? In other words, plan ahead when we know the streets are going to be asphalted, go out and lift them, let them come up to that height with their asphalt.
They probably lift, when they come in and do, they do too many streets for us there. At least for the expense for us to do that, really cost us a lot. On an average intersection, you're probably talking about 5 lids per intersection. You've got sewer and generally 4 water in every intersection.
I've asked the county's traffic engineer, contacted them and asked them to give us their upcoming schedule for the next couple of years so that we can see if anything is within Discovery Bay, and then we can coordinate that so that we can lower our cost per unit. Right, right. So they're going to get that for us.
While we're on that, I know that you just mentioned it possibly back at Discovery Bay Boulevard, right out here at the intersection for this stop sign. Now that asphalt
is melted.
Yeah, melted it all.
Yeah, but
you have them to come out and maybe just
grind it.
They probably do whatever needs to be done to repair that entire intersection. We're on the
system. I'm a phone call to the county manager. There's actually a few folks within the community that need that work.
I'd like to have that phone call made.
Thanks.
We're looking at 11 grand for the next 6 years, 7 years.
11 grand per year, yeah. And I think it's a CIP item, so I don't know if we can increase that a little bit just to speed the process up to get us to a point where the next 4 or 5 years we're good, and then we can go forward from there as an ongoing basis. I don't know.
Decrease the CIP budget so we can put more.
Right.
It makes sense. Get them done rather than prolong it out from 7 or 8 years, and then all of a sudden resurfacing.
We got started again.
Just finish painting the building and bridge.
Right.
Thank you. I will pass that along to our finance manager.
All right. Thank you. Public comment. We'll call the public comment. So bring it back to the board. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Okay. Item E5. So send a letter to an opposition. Senate Bill 85.
Thank you. This item was brought to our attention by President Pease, and this was a notice that came out from the California Special Districts Association requesting that special districts take a position of opposition to a bill that was introduced in January by Senator Lois Wolk out of Davis. And in essence, what this, and I should note that the bill that was introduced in January does not currently have any co-sponsors. There is some opposition lining up on it. But in essence, what it does is it eliminates the ability of a public agency when entering into a contract with a design professional, so an architect or an engineer, to require that architect or engineer defend claims against the public agency, like the town, if in fact there's a flaw in their design. The challenge has been for design professionals is they say that they have a very difficult time getting insurance. And I talked to the representative of the Special Districts Association, and they said, in fact, that was a very real challenge. This is not a manufactured problem. It's a very real challenge. But they strongly believe that transfers the issue where it should be an issue with insurance companies, and it transfers that liability to public agencies, and it's just an unacceptable, the proposal that's being put forth is not the right answer to a very valid problem. So I have attached both the information from special districts as well as I pulled the information from Lois Wolk's office so you could see her perspective, sort of the opposite perspective. Then a draft letter was sent through, and we just simply formatted it. It's on the back and put the district's letterhead on it. So this item is for your consideration as to whether you want me to send this letter, which is a letter respectfully opposing Senate Bill 885 as written.
As I brought forward, I think the CS2DA does a good job keeping us informed. That's what I found out about it. But I think I should probably sign that because we want to go from an elected official to an elected official. So I think if we might be able to get a little more something out of this by having an elected official.
Can we get public comment?
Yeah, any public comment on that? Seeing none, we'll close public comment.
I think we should support the opposition. Obviously, it's something that was tried to bring us forward a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
and it's not a good idea for us. So I thank you for bringing it forward, Bill, and I think it would be appropriate to have the president of the board sign it, and I would make a motion that we move forward with it.
Move the second.
Any other comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thanks, Bill, for the offer.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move to item G, president and director's comments, Water Education Foundation, Director Grace.
Home movies time, you ready, Carol?
I'm going to put it up for you right now.
I got seven quick pictures here for you guys, and you're going to have,
I'm going to give it to you.
Can you run it through for me?
Oh, sure.
I had the opportunity to go through the Water Education Foundation to do a tour of water being supplied to Southern California, because it has such a direct effect on the water that's coming from Northern California, and I learned some very interesting things. It started off at Hoover Dam, because of 9/11, that is no longer a road from Arizona to California to Nevada. There's a new bridge, which you'll see in a couple more slides, that's been built, and it's strictly a walking. There's a generator floor. We got it inside, but it's a very, they don't let you inside the dam anymore because of security issues, even though we were with a group of guided tour water professionals, you might say. Next slide. That's how far down Lake Mead is. It's down 118 feet. But if you'll notice, this brown line right here is really what it's down right now. This was the 83 high water mark. So really it's down this much. It's down about 80 feet from where it needs to be. But it's to the point where electrical production, let me go back, drop is what we're talking about here. The Colorado River's in 16 years of drought. We're in four. They're in 16 years of drought. There's seven states that are part of the Colorado Compact. What's amazing to me is that seven states can come together and decide how best to use this resource. Not everybody's happy about it. In fact, nobody really likes California too much because we get the majority of the water. But they've come to an agreement on it, and we can't even get Northern and Southern California to agree on it. That's one of the things that popped into my head during this whole thing. So that's Lake Mead. Next picture, please. There you can see the bridge. It's on the other side of it, but you can see how far down the input tubes are exposed. And so the generators are down to about 75% of capacity right now because there just isn't enough velocity and volume of water that's going through the dam to be able to turn the turbines. They're actually putting some new type of turbines in there with large mouths on them to get more electricity, of which the water goes to Vegas, but none of the electricity goes to Vegas. Kind of weird, huh? That's the new bridge. It's really quite spectacular to see when you're standing on the other side of the dam looking back at it. Next slide, please. This is Parker Dam. As you go down the river, and we didn't go down the river, we were in a bus. And actually, I got to tell you, it was a tremendous amount of information, because when you got from a tour guide at a facility, you got on the bus, and then there was somebody else that had gotten on the bus, and you're getting another 2 hours while you're driving of education. While you're going through the process, it's very, really quite interesting. I'd recommend it. This is Parker Dam at the end of Lake Havasu. This electrical generation plant here generates enough electricity just to pump the water to California. That's the only purpose of those generators. And if you go to the next slide, you'll see how much water is going to California. There's nine of these 10-foot tubes, full water coming out of Havasu, going up to those three 16-foot tubes up at the top. They start the process of gravity feed all the way into California. Now, we're at Lake Havasu here, so we're not that close to the California border yet. It goes quite a ways. And this is all owned by our friends at the Metropolitan Water District in Southern California. Not really popular people with anybody, including us. We went and saw their very first reservoir, and they have some beautiful facilities. Tennis courts, it's amazing. And their general manager came to speak to us at this, right near where this was, and I literally, about three quarters of the way in, had to go take a break and leave the room, because otherwise they've already decided that the tunnels are in. They're just waiting for the water to start flowing. That's how convinced they are that this thing's going through. I mean, they're already counting their gallons, man. And their position is this: we're promised this water, and we're going to get it. If we have to build tunnels to get it, we'll build tunnels to get it. But you're not giving us the water that we were promised under the agreement of the California Water Resources Board back when Brown Sr. built the California Aqueduct. It's a nightmare. Next slide. Okay, and this is the Salton Sea. Those are dead fish. And the whole, from here to the parking lot is about 40 yards, and it's all dead fish. That's not beach, that's dead fish. Those are, and what that is doing is that's causing a tremendous respiratory problem in Southern California. The bones and the disintegration of these fishes are actually blowing into the San Diego area and causing respiratory problems there. That's how fine the powder is when these fish get right. And they've been doing it. Now, the interesting, it's not a good picture, but about, you can see with standing water right here, just about another 3 feet from there is the lake. And I'm like, well, why do the fish, why don't they just stay in the lake? But for whatever reason, they lay on the ground and die. And the whole lake is surrounded by these, because there's no water from the Colorado making it to the Salton Sea anymore. It's being consumed for agricultural purposes. Interesting thing, we got to Coachella Valley, am I saying that right?
Coachella,
and we did a tour of their water. It was very interesting because the water wastewater manager from basically Catherine's counterpart for Lake Havasu came and spoke to us during dinner when we were at Lake Havasu. We then spoke with the water district, one of the board members who happens to be a farmer in the Coachella Valley, about the water that they're getting out of that huge aquifer we all know about that's underneath Palm Springs, right? That has dropped 180 feet in the last 7 years or whatever it is. The interesting thing is that they're at the upper end of the valley by the water, windmills, they actually get water out of the California Aqueduct. The rest of it comes from the Colorado River. So, from their aquifer. The law was written to say that they are not able to use water from the California Aqueduct to replenish their aquifer, but they're very vocal and very proud of the fact that they have found a way around that law. And so while we have farmers up in the Central Valley of California that are losing their farms to dirt, they're actually recharging their aquifer. It's gone up 30 feet in the last 2 years, and they're doing it with the water coming out of the delta. And I just thought it was amazing that they can be at their bravado was so big about how proud they are that they're bringing back water, and their artesian wells are overflowing and yada yada, and the water, we have farmers that are just dying for that water that aren't able to use it. So this it's extremely important that we stay very active and aware of what's going on with the water that's coming through. And I get that we're all one state. I get that we shouldn't be able to hog the resources up here because they start up here in the Sierras. But we need to be very aware of what the Southern California is doing. The other thing that they made comments on was their recent purchases of islands in the Delta to protect the environment because they're concerned about the environment. I don't think we need to discuss what the real purpose of the purchases are, but they're very proud of the fact that they've got so much money. See, because their base is so large. Yeah, all they have to do is increase rates $3 to 50 million people, and they can buy whatever they want. And that's what they do, because they've got such a large customer base down there. So it's going to get worse before it gets better. This year's great. Obviously, it's awesome that we're getting the water, but we need to be very careful of what's going on with these tunnels and how our backyard is going to be invaded by people that don't have our best interests in mind. So anyway, it was a great trip. Enjoyed going on it, and I recommend. This foundation does trips throughout. They do one right here in the Delta. They do one in the Valley. They do one up in Northern California. It's very informative and tremendously educational, and I highly recommend it. That's it.
Thank you, Karen. Okay. How was there any people from Northern California there?
The most of the people that were from Northern California were with the California Water Board out of Sacramento. They were people that worked for the state of California Regional Water Control Board. And I did learn some interesting things from them too about some grants that may be available to us that we can look into in this. And I got some contact names on that. And I'm going to, when I get a chance, I'll sit down with Catherine and share those. But the majority of the people were from We're from Southern California. So I shouldn't say that. There's a whole bunch from the Valley also. But there was one guy from Arizona who just got, he was one of the presenters, and he kept talking about how Arizona was getting shafted, and he just was like, one guy. Finally, it became a joke because he was capped on every opportunity that they could be. Because California gets 4.4 million acre feet of the Colorado River. By comparison, Nevada gets 380,000, Nevada gets 420,000, California gets 4.4 million. And poor Mexico, where the Colorado is, gets 100,000, and even that has got some salt in it sometimes. The fact that laws were passed in 84 maybe, that said that we have to maintain a better water control of the water that's going into Mexico. Anyway.
Thank you.
Well, that's pretty recent since these water rights go back to the 1800s.
Okay, we're going to move on to the general manager report on our sustainable plan.
Thank you. And if you could show that.
Do you just have reference comments?
We did. We asked some non-additional.
Yeah, I just want to point something out in reference to what Kevin just talked about. As we sit here tonight, District 7 Livermore is meeting right now. The general manager of their water district has presented a letter of support of the tunnels. And in her letter, she's claiming that they're supported by the Chambers of Commerce, the Lions Club, Discovery Bay residents. So several Discovery Bay residents, including several of the Yakima members, have headed down there tonight. And we'll find out what the outcome of the meeting is. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get their board to approve the tunnels, to ask support the tunnels issues. So, yeah. So we'll see what happens tomorrow.
With that in mind, we probably as an elected board need to determine what they actually are putting in that letter. And if it mentions something about Discovery Bay, I think it's responsible on us to respond back to it, whichever
we get our attorneys involved at that point, because that's nefarious on their part.
We'll know tonight when Michael Weber gets back. He's attending it in he's representing the outcome and several residents. I see several residents have gone to it. Okay, so we'll see what comes out.
And this board has taken positions previously in relation to it, so be consistent with that.
All right, thank you. Okay, now we'll go to groundwater sustainability.
Thank you very much. I lost my notes for you, so I'll go from memory. At your December meeting, you received a report from Ludolf and Scalamini on the Groundwater Sustainability Act of 2015. I hope that I said that right. We are lucky that Curtis is here this evening because he is a water expert. At the time that the update that you received in December, the explanation in December was that, you know, the basics, that this law requires planning for groundwater basins, that it requires this planning on a basin-wide and some discussion and cooperation with adjoining basins, and calls for what they call groundwater sustainability agencies. Could you go to the next slide for me? And then back in, I think it was perhaps Rick's last meeting that he was here, he explained that he and I and Curtis had gone to, you were there, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. Had gone to meet with the State Department of Water Resources to broach the issue of separating out East Contra Costa County from the Tracy sub-basin area for a couple of reasons. One is the hydrogeologic issues, that there's just really very different sort of practical issues in terms of managing groundwater supplies. But then beyond that, they are really very different agencies, and we just don't have much connectivity. We don't have that. These other areas of the basin are Alameda County, San Joaquin County. They're dealing with very, very different issues than what we are. And they were open to that politically, particularly more on a political level. Less on a scientific level, and you could really see from Department of Water Resources that their hope is that these agencies coalesce, that we work together, we're going to plan together, and be managing this resource together. So I wanted to let you know that much more is going to be coming on this item. The application was filed to separate That area that you'll see, the East Contra Costa area from the remainder of the basin, it was filed by the City of Brentwood on behalf of the East Contra Costa agencies. There is possibility that they may need a letter of support from this district, and in the event that that happens before there's another meeting, I would ask to get your concurrence that I could send a letter of support for that. And Curtis, do you want to add anything more? I know that we could probably go on for a long time about all of the various steps, but separating and being able to talk about our basin with agencies in our same community is the proper first step. If they approve that, the next step will be the formation of this groundwater agency and what the voting will be and who participates and all of that work. And after that, the next steps is actually coming up with a groundwater sustainability plan. Following that is regulation. The theory is that you will ultimately, as a group, be regulating groundwater to ensure its sustainability. Now, that's a very high level and brief overview. Do you want to add on?
Yeah, and I would be very careful myself, being very careful to speak a whole lot more, because you're going to get inundated with it, you know, very shortly. As Catherine mentioned, that it's really just the first step in the governance, let alone the implementation of actually any regulatory enforcement or anything of that nature. But this is really just the first step, and as Catherine mentioned, it's intended on both a scientific and jurisdictional basis to provide for a East Contra Costa coalition or cooperative GSA, which is the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, or at least the first step to that. So obviously this is an important issue for Discovery Bay because of its sole source with groundwater. It's not the largest groundwater user, but it's darn close, but it is the only sole groundwater user in that area. So the letter of support that Catherine mentioned, the general manager mentioned, is very helpful, particularly from DWR's perspective with that filing that Brentwood has made. So I think that her recommendation is a very good one at this point.
I would say that for myself, I don't have any problem supporting the concept. I think we've got to watch out for ourselves.
Yeah, and I would definitely think that as a board, do we need a motion to give her that authority?
Yeah, I would suggest that.
I would make a motion that we give the general manager the authority to draft a letter that would support the basin being the sub basin being supported by the local region, the local agencies.
Yeah, I think not just because I'm the president, but I think whoever was sitting there should be signing those as elected officials. I think it carries a little more.
That'd be fine.
Different way it would be, but it shows the board.
Absolutely.
That.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Any other
comments? Second
motion. All right. All
those
in favor?
Aye. Aye. Almost got listed.
If I can.
Yeah, is there any public comment? Thank you. No public comment.
If I could just add one more item on this. So many times when we start off with whatever the topic is, whether it's solid waste or hazardous waste or groundwater or surface water planning, we end up being handed a great big law that seems very complex, and I think it's extremely important, and I would plan hopefully to bring this back to you, maybe not the April 4th meeting, but perhaps a meeting after that you have some time to consider the end game here, because these groundwater sustainability agencies, which we will be a member and a voting member, you need to be considering who will be at that table and who will be voting. Because at the end, it's going to move into regulations and ensuring that our groundwater is sustainable and who can pull out from that groundwater basin and can they move groundwater out of that basin and sell it. And those have real important issues for Discovery Bay in particular because we're solely groundwater. So I would plan on bringing that back to you probably at the second meeting in April. And have a more lengthy discussion.
Okay.
And I have a couple of more items, if you don't mind, under General Manager, if I can have just a few more minutes.
Sure.
One is that at the last meeting, we had the LAFCO item, and President Pease and Vice President Leet were designated the voting members and alternates, and I told you we'd bring back the nominees back to you at the April meeting, and there was one nominee, so I'm not going to bring that back to you, but the LACCO staff is out trying to round everybody up, because even though there is only one nominee, they need a quorum to show up. So I will not be putting that back on your agenda. There is one person, it is Mike McGill, who's a sitting member, and the date of the meeting is Monday, April 18th at 10 a.m., and that's at the Central Contra Costa Sanitary District, 5019 Imhoff Place.
I've been attending though, so I'll put it on the calendar. I'll be there.
And then lastly, I think I have another picture to show you, a couple pictures to show you. I believe that you were told by Gregory we had a notice of violation at the plant too, and we needed to build the apron. Can you flip through those screens? And I just wanted to let you know, Bernie did a great job getting that done. Next slide. And there it is. We received notice yesterday that was completed, and I think by the end of the day, we filed the information with the state to clear that up and clear that violation off our record. So really quick action by both Gregory Harris from Hewitt Engineering as well as Bernie from Veolia. They did a great job getting that done quickly and getting the paperwork filed correctly back with the state. So that comes off the list.
Great. Okay. Subcommittee updates. We did have a Parks and Recreation Subcommittee meeting today, and Director Steele, when I was there, Director Steele, I think it was updates.
We've got some upgrades, and we're looking at the expenses versus what our wish list is for some of those PG&E funds that may come available, prioritizing those now, but we'll get some ADA access around the community center and other projects.
Yeah, a nice tour, and it's like anything else, not enough money to go around, so we're trying to prioritize some things. And try to benefit as much of the community as we can at this particular time. And PG&E hasn't sent us the money yet either. The check's not even in the mail, even though it's here. It said, hey, look at this. So, anyway, we're working through those. We'll bring them back as we get them squared away.
As the president, I showed the Beale Street with that check and asked for it.
Exactly.
Here's this check. Now, what do I do?
I can take for the bank.
Okay, we have some correspondence, minutes of aviation and East Cannon Fire. We have a public records request from Smart Procure. Curious about that, what they're looking at POs and vendors. Is that, and Smart Procure sounds like some kind of procurement process? Do we know about them?
I Googled them and spoke to them on the phone. What they do is gather information from public agencies and then they sell it. And so they were only interested in what could be uploaded within their specific data system, and so we didn't have that much that was actually relevant to them, but they send out these sort of mass mailings, gather as much as they can, and then have a searchable database for people. So we were able to respond, I think, within 24, 48 hours to them, and so this item is closed out.
Right. So that, and if I'm assuming correctly, that would be projects for our case, coming up projects where they would notify people that they can come and start to bid some of the work.
Actually, what they asked for is what we had already done, not prospective projects. So they wanted all of our previous POs, invoices, things like that, but they wanted it in as only no fax, yes, no photocopies, right. No anything. And the type of data system that they have didn't match as well with our district, so we were of not so much help for them.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll move on to future agenda items. Does the board have any future agenda items? Hearing none, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
I'll make that motion.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Meeting adjourned. 8:29.